interview for the project on America's Faculty, Oral History Project, LNS, America's Faculty. I was born December 16th, 1924, on Staten Island, New York, the eldest child of Leonard M. Pasano, Jr. and Grace Dyer. I was the oldest of five children, four of whom lived through childhood. I had a sister who died in infancy. I have two surviving brothers and one surviving sister. I lived my entire life up until graduation from high school on Staten Island, New York, in the house on 151 South St. Austin's Place. My entire schooling was at the Staten Island Academy, a small private day school on Staten Island. My father worked for the Standard Oil Company of New Jersey Marine Department, where he was editor of an in-house magazine for their licensed personnel, and then became the port officer for the terminal of their extensive tanker fleet during the Second World War. After the Second World War, he retired and moved to Maine. He and my mother were divorced at that time, and he spent the rest of his life as a semi-retired farmer in Maine. My mother, neither of my parents graduated from college, but both had attended college. My father had one semester, I believe, at MIT. My mother spent 2 years at Smith College in Massachusetts. Several other members of my family had been college graduates. My grandfather, for whom I was named, was a graduate of Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, and then was a professor for many years at MIT, where he studied mathematics, where he taught mathematics. My maternal grandfather was a lawyer, graduated from Harvard College, and he had several sons who my uncle also graduated from Harvard College. Staten Island Academy was a day school, and it was very small. I attended the same class throughout my entire career as a in secondary school. When the class graduated in 1942, there were, I recall, 20 in the class, 10 girls and 10 boys. So the education we got was quite individual. I was particularly influenced by several high school teachers, including a science teacher who developed individual projects and teaching for his students. And I had the benefit of that teaching. I also attended several classes at various places on in Manhattan, at colleges there while I was not high school student. When I applied to college, I applied to Harvard because I thought, first of all, that it would please my mother, but also and her family. Also, I thought it would be giving a good education. And I was accepted and went there for 3 semesters, starting immediately. This was, of course, wartime experience, starting in June 1942 and extending until May, I believe, in 1943, when I was scheduled to be drafted. I was then drafted into the Army, and after infantry basic training, was sent as an ASTP student to Louisiana State University, where I stayed for 2 semesters until the program was terminated by the Army, and then was sent to the infantry and joined a infantry division, and I went overseas with that infantry division and fought in the Battle of the Bulge and the Battle of the Rhine and up until the end of the World War II in Europe. I was scheduled to be sent back through the United States to the Far East as a replacement soldier, but the war in the Far East against Japan ended while I was in transit, and I was detoured instead to an engineering company in Bremerhaven, Germany. I was there for a month when I had the opportunity to apply for the Army University, American University in Europe, which was set up at Villefranche, I think that's incorrect, set up in Biarritz, France. So I was accepted into that program and spent 2 semesters at Biarritz. At the end of my first semester, I was a student, and then I was chosen to be a teaching assistant for the 3rd semester, and went through that as well, assisting in biology. At the end of that time, I was ready for discharge and was sent directly home to the United States, where I was discharged in April or May, I think, of 1946. After a short vacation, I went back to college, to Harvard again, where I studied continuously until I got my bachelor's degree in January of 1948. At that time, I entered graduate studies at Yale University, and was at Yale from 1948 till 1952. Now I'd like to answer your questions about my schooling and my undergraduate life at Harvard. I became interested in biology primarily as a result of the teaching of biology by a dedicated high school teacher who devised a number of special projects for me to indulge in, and also in developing interest in marine animals as a result of my family's interest in the ocean, my father being a seaman, originally, and living on Staten Island, not too far from the shore. I could do some exploring as a child of the shoreline and do a little collecting myself. I was not a very enthusiastic biologist, but I was interested in biology. When I went to college, in the first three semesters before I left to go into the service, I was so busy with all of the many social and intellectual activities of Harvard that I was sort of overwhelmed, perhaps, or at least very busy with them all. I got involved in the undergraduate radio station, where I did announcing and programming. I was interested also in political activities, and did some work in the Harvard Liberal Union, and all in all, had a fine time at Harvard at that time. After my 3 years of army life, I came back to Harvard knowing that I wanted to become a biologist. I had been exposed to the possibility of a professional life as a college university teacher by my experiences at the American University in Biarritz and my work with the undergraduate teachers there. These were civilians who had been hired by the Army to come and teach at the American University in Biarritz. They convinced me that my early interests in medicine were naive and that my interests really were in biology. So when I returned to Harvard, I maintained my major as a biologist, but switched over effectively to a pre-professional life, aiming towards a doctorate in zoology. I did a undergraduate honors thesis with Professor John Welch at Harvard, and he arranged for me to go and spend the summer as a junior investigator at Solomon's Island, Maryland, where the state has a laboratory. I was working on the question of whether hormonal or endocrine manipulation could be used in the commercial softshell crab fishery, and I decided, found that it was not applicable, but then went back to Harvard and I continued my studies on the control of molting in crabs, and wrote an undergraduate honors thesis on that subject, which I submitted to Dr. Welch and to the department. I got a cum laude degree at Harvard with that work. I applied to several graduate schools in wanting to continue my work with crustaceans, and the one that I was accepted for was at Yale, where I went to work with Talbot Waterman, who had been a student of Dr. Welch's at Harvard. So I went there with Waterman being a young faculty member, and I was his first graduate student. I did not work with Waterman on his research, but rather continued the work that I had initiated at Harvard, and took that on as my doctoral research. And I spent a couple of summers at the Marine Biological Laboratory at Woods Hole, working on my research and taking courses there. And I also had the chance of going down to work for a school year, the school year of 1950-51, at the Lerner Marine Laboratory on Bimini Island in the Bahamas. While I was at Bimini, I was able to carry out investigations into the nature of the endocrine control of molting in crabs, and I worked out the fact that this was a example of neurosecretion. The concept of neurosecretion had just been introduced to biology at that time, so this was a good example of the importance of the principle of neurosecretion in the animal kingdom. It turned out that John Welch at Harvard had a graduate student at the same time who had also been working on a similar field, and we came to our conclusions together and presented our work jointly at Christmas meetings and elsewhere. Again, with Professor Welch's support. When I received my doctorate in 1952, I applied for a position at the University of Washington, where one of my major professors had one of his students studying, working. At the same time, I applied for the new National Science Foundation postdoctoral fellowships, and I was fortunate enough to get one of those fellowships. There were four given that year, I believe, in the first year of the program, and I got one of them to go to Cambridge University in England to study with Carl Pantin, P-A-N-T-I-N. So I therefore wrote to Seattle at the University of Washington and told them that I was not interested in a job with them that year because I was going to England. I had a very interesting and successful postdoc with Carl Pantin. When I first went over, he was away in Brazil, and so I went directly to Naples to work at the famous zoological station there, the Stazione Zoologica. And then after working on a project for myself that summer, I went to Cambridge and met Dr. Pantin, subsequently Professor Pantin of the department. And we started work in collaboration on a project that he had in mind on sea anemones. So this was a definite shift in my interest from the endocrinology and neurosecretion of crustaceans to neurobiology of Coelenterates, with emphasis on sea anemones. I worked with Pantin, and we went back to in Cambridge, and then I went back to Naples, and Pantin came out and joined me subsequently, and we worked together there in Naples. And then I moved my lab to Plymouth in England, where there's a marine laboratory, and Dr. Pantin came down and we worked there together in addition. And it was a very profitable and interesting postdoc experience for me. Sometime during that spring, I was asked by the University of Washington if I would still reconsider or still consider going out to join their department. And so I, they had found a one-year replacement to the position that I had declined, but that person, Ernst Flory, had was going back to Germany, so I could come and take the slot that I had originally applied for, but then had turned down. And so I accepted that position, again without ever being interviewed or visiting the university, or in fact ever having been to Seattle. I went out to Seattle in the summer of, at the end of the summer of 1953, and I was there at in the zoology department for 2 years. It was a very pleasant place to be. I enjoyed the teaching and found it a challenge, and I enjoyed the research opportunities at the University of Washington, and particularly enjoyed their fabulous marine laboratory at Friday Harbor in Puget Sound. That's in the San Juan Islands, about 60 miles north of Seattle. So I spent parts of 2 summers at the Friday Harbor Laboratory doing research and assisting in the teaching there. And the second half of the summer, I went back to the Marine Biological Laboratory at Woods Hole, where I taught in the invertebrate course for those 2 summers. At the spring of 55-56, I was asked by Yale University if I would return to my alma mater and join their department. And I found myself unable to decline that invitation, although I was very happy in Seattle, and many times afterwards thought that I had made an error in leaving the University of Washington to return to Yale. However, I did go back to Yale and rejoined that department where I had been a graduate student. I was there off and on until I went to the University of Wisconsin in the fall of 1964. I say off and on because I was away for 2 years during my stay at Yale. The first when I went as a Fulbright research fellow down to the University College of the West Indies in Kingston, Jamaica, where I worked on selenorate neurobiology, and then the year before I eventually came to Wisconsin, I applied for and received a Guggenheim Fellowship to join two other scientists in a joint endeavor to study neurobiology in selenorates. The first part of that year was spent at St. Andrews University in Scotland, where I was supposed to collaborate with Adrian Horridge, and did collaborate with George Mackey. And then Mackey and I went down to the Marine Laboratory, the French Marine Laboratory in Villefranche, which is next door to Nice, where we continued our studies together. The collaboration with Horridge never did materialize very effectively, so that part of the plans were scrubbed. I was working down at Villefranche with George Mackey on trying to record the electrical activity of epithelial conduction in selenorates. We were using a siphonophore as our preferred material. The Villefranche Laboratory is a wonderful place for getting fresh siphonophore material for study. This in the spring then of 1964, I expected to go back to Yale and try once more to achieve tenure. The tenure decision had been postponed before I left on the Guggenheim. When I received, more or less out of the blue, a letter of inquiry from the University of Wisconsin, Department of Zoology, asking me whether I might consider coming out to Madison. I'd never been to Madison before. I knew very little about it, but I was getting increasingly unhappy at the situation at Yale. I was not at all sure that I could achieve tenure there, and I also found that the intellectual life at New Haven and at Yale was not exactly what I would like. I found that the atmosphere in the department was not very conducive to collaboration and collegial interactions. So I addressed the request from Madison by saying, yes, I would like to be considered for a position there. And they replied by saying that they had a member of their department traveling in Europe shortly, and could he come and interview me? And so I agreed, and shortly thereafter, R.K. Meyer from the Department of Zoology in Madison came to Nice, and I got together with him, and we talked about the work I was doing and my background. And I guess I passed that interview because the next thing I heard from Madison was they wanted me to come from Villefranche to be interviewed. Now that doesn't sound like so much nowadays with jet travel commonplace, but in 1964 that was quite a flattering invitation, and I accepted and flew to Madison by way of Madrid and New York and Chicago. While I was at Chicago spending the night, I spent the night with my uncle and aunt, and they assured me that Madison would be a very nice place to be and that I should seriously consider going there if I had the opportunity. So I went up to Madison and apparently did well with my interview, and I looked over the department and thought it looked very nice. And so when I left, they said they'd get back to me shortly, and sure enough, within a week or two or a couple of weeks after, they asked me if I would come there with tenure as an associate professor. Well, this solved the problems that I was having at Yale of obtaining tenure, and it also meant that I was trading one academic base for another. And although I wasn't as sure about the stature of Madison at that time as I am now, I thought that the department as a whole seemed a very friendly place to be and that I would do well to go there. So I accepted that invitation and went to Madison in the fall of 1964. I stayed there until my retirement in May of 1995. Well, let me go back a little bit and try to answer more of the questions that you've posed about Yale and Cambridge. Waterman was a very interesting man to work under. He did not expect me to work with him directly, and he accepted the fact that I had my own project and wanted to work on it myself. And this, as a matter of fact, was quite characteristic of the other graduate students at Yale at that time. We were expected to have our own research projects and to work on them with the faculty guidance, of course, but not in any sense as members of a faculty graduate student team, which is what is so common nowadays. During that time, I was a teaching assistant in elementary courses and in a physiology course that Dr. Waterman taught, and in genetics and in invertebrate biology. And so I got a pretty broad background of experience in teaching in the laboratory. I think, as a whole, that my graduate training was fine, although I don't think that I was as prepared as I might have been for the development of biology into more of a team activity. It was very much working as an individual by yourself that was emphasized at Yale at that time. The graduate students of course, did all sorts of things together, socially and intellectually, and that was a very positive aspect of the Yale education. My fellow graduate students were, as a group, exceptionally stimulating, interesting, and very bright, so that I found that keeping up with them was good for my own education. When I went to Cambridge to work with Dr. Panton, I found that Cambridge was a very exciting place to be. You may recall that in 1952-53, when I was there, this was the year that Watson and Crick were there, and in which they announced their findings on the structure of DNA. And I knew them, not well, but I did know them and knew people who knew them better. And so I was aware of this sort of exciting activity in biology going on. And Cambridge was an extremely interesting place to be. I also enjoyed my work at the marine laboratories in Naples and at Plymouth with Dr. Panton, or by myself. Moving on to the University of Washington in Seattle, that was an extremely pleasant department to be in. A number of teachers who had joined the department after the Second World War were just beginning to make their names, and it was a great pleasure to be a slightly junior member of that department. I'm thinking particularly the activities that we all carried out at the Friday Harbor Laboratory and the efforts of the zoology department to set up that laboratory into what has now become a world-class institution. When I went back to Yale, I found that the interaction between various members of the department was not quite as free as I had thought it would be from my experience at Washington. It was more of a class distinction between junior faculty and senior faculty. I never felt at Yale that I was directly involved in the departmental governance that I had felt was my role in Washington, and I might add, which again came to be one of the major attractions of teaching at Madison. So my first problem with Yale was that they were expecting me to make a judicious compromise between doing first-class research and doing first-class teaching. Well, I attempted to do both. In hindsight, I probably erred a little bit more on my teaching assignments than I did on my research, but I worked hard on my research and I believe achieved some very significant and good results. However, I was not quite the world-class biologist that I guess they were looking for, and so I was sort of hanging in there trying to convince them that my work was excellent and was really important, and still struggling with trying to achieve tenure there. But when I came up for tenure and then was put aside and the decision was postponed, I chose the moment to accept the Guggenheim Fellowship, which I had just won, to go off to Europe again and work with George Mackey. By this time, I had done work with a number of different kinds of selenerates and was one of the leaders in the field at that time of studying the neurobiology of selenerates. So I went back to work in Europe with a good deal of enthusiasm in a more senior role than I had had when I was there as a first-year postdoc. You ask about other activities prior to my being hired by the University of Wisconsin. I was not a postdoc research assistant at the American Museum of Natural History. Rather, I was a pre-doc research assistant there, and that was the year that I went and spent working doing my own research at Bimini, at the Lerner Marine Laboratory at Bimini. The postdoc fellow at Cambridge in 1962-63, I do not recognize that citation. The Fulbright Research Fellow at University College of the West Indies, I've already mentioned, it was a chance to get away from New Haven and work full-time on research on selenerate biology, and the Guggenheim Fellowship I've already mentioned. Now I'll turn to my career at Madison. As I've already indicated, I knew very little about the zoology department in Madison when I accepted the position to go there. I, in general, thought that the university had a good reputation, but I didn't know very much about it. Zoology had two buildings when I came to Madison. It was in part in the old laboratory at Burge Hall, and then it was also in the brand new zoology research building one block away. The people who went to that new building moved there just at the time that I came to Madison. So I moved into space that was vacated by people who were then going down to the Zoo Research Building. The splitting up of the department in this manner, I think, was a major problem for the department. We had the department separated into two parts, and at approximately the same time, there began to become strong pressures nationally and internationally for zoology to be divided into two divisions, two specializations. The molecular biology type and the sort of whole animal type of zoology. Well, this created a personal problem for me. I was hired to be the comparative physiologist, taking the place of a man who had taught and introduced comparative physiology to Madison. There's now been
long delay. Put it aside, for whatever reason I can not recall, and I'll take it up that I was in Burge Hall, whereas most of the physiologically inclined people were in the Zoo Research Building. But there was no opportunity for me immediately to move to the Zoology Research Building. And also I felt unhappy at the division of zoology effectively into two separate departments. So I tried to maintain it to be a sort of bridge between the whole animal people and the experimental cell molecular people. Not altogether successfully, but that was my goal. The division of the department into these two buildings, subsequently the building of a third building next door to the Zoo Research Building called Noland Hall, and the movement of the headquarters of the department to that building, created a permanent schism between two parts of the department, which I think was very unfortunate. Although people all tried to compensate for that, what should have been done for the department was for it to build a third building next door to the Zoology Research Building or the Noland Hall and move the rest of us down there, freeing Burge Hall entirely to the botanists. But for whatever reasons there were, the university administration never went that route. From time to time, there were pressures put on the department to move to the School of Agriculture, but I certainly was unhappy at that thought and did not want to support that move. And there were also various talk about splitting off the molecular people into a new department, but that never quite materialized either, although relatively there were some institutes of molecular biology that were erected down at the Ag campus. So during all the remaining years that I was in Madison, from 64 until 95, we were divided up physically into these several subunits. And although we tried hard to maintain our unity as a department, I think that all of us suffered from this division. Of this problem of the division of the department into two or three parts, let me cite a specific example. When I first came to Madison, my laboratory was right next door to the instrumentation office, the home of the technician who helped us. Presence there made a considerable difference for me in getting my research going. But after the building, first of all, he was moved upstairs to being more of a supervisor, and but still being in Verge. But then, when the department's Noland Hall was completed, he moved down there, and that meant that this technical support was not next door to my lab, but was a block away, and that made it considerably less available. Also, the departmental machinist moved to Noland, and so I couldn't get help from him as easily as I had in the past. I missed the contact, the next-door contacts with a number of my colleagues in the department, and although I maintained contacts with the animal behaviorists, Jack Haleman, and then his And of all the colleagues that I had in the department, the one that I was closest to You asked about the role of the chairman in the zoology department, and the traditions one of the questions that you've brought up is the question of my teaching. I was happily interacting with Marion Meyer in our joint teaching of the comparative physiology course and the comparative physiology laboratory, but then I realized that I really did not, I was not doing as much research as I should be, and that in order to make a proper contribution to the department, I should do more teaching. So when the course came available, I volunteered to teach a undergraduate course for non-majors. Now that was an interesting challenge, and a challenge that I enjoyed. I hope I did a good job on it, but I certainly enjoyed the teaching of it because it allowed me to teach whatever part of biology I felt was most important for non-scientist undergraduates to know about. And I did not have any curriculum that I had to meet or scenario that was expected of me to cover. I was expected rather to make the course as lively and interesting as possible and as relevant to their current and future lives. And so I tried to do that and found that it was an interesting challenge which I enjoyed trying to meet. Whether or not it was totally successful, I will never know, but I did find that it was a worthwhile trial. And eventually, when I left, I turned that over to a colleague who was more or less at loose ends and needed to have some teaching to do, Jim Pauly, and so he took that course over. And of course, I'm sure teaches it entirely differently than I did because his ideas of what were important and necessary were different than mine. you ask about professional organizations that I was involved with, well, I was a regular attendee at the annual meetings of the American Society of Zoologists, and considered that as my primary home. The Society for Experimental Biology is in England, so that was not something I could attend more than a couple of times in my life. And the Marine Biological Laboratory at Woods Hole, I only went back for one semester very late in my career as a library researcher after my early years teaching there in the invertebrate course. That was primarily because I found that for my own work, the facilities and the ambiance at the Friday Harbor Marine Laboratory of the University of Washington were much superior to the much more busy atmosphere and crowds of biologists at the MBL. So I found that going to Friday Harbor was a great pleasure from being away from getting away from the campus and the teaching responsibilities I had there, and I liked very much the attitude and the support of the staff and directors at the Friday Harbor Laboratory. One should particularly notice that Dennis Willows, who has been a director of that laboratory for many years, has done an outstanding job in making people come and welcome and feel at ease at that laboratory. It's a fine place to work, and of course, most of the time, my friend George Mackey was there also, so we would share activities as well as go off and each do our own things at the same time. When and why did you retire? Well, I think there was the proximate cause and the ultimate cause. The proximate cause was that I suffered a heart attack in the late fall, early winter of 1993, I think it was. Of course, that I had a period of medical leave that spring when I did not do any teaching. And then coming back after that, I found that I had slowed down and that I was no longer able to do things at the same level as before. Also, by that time, I was 70 years old, and it seemed like it was an appropriate time for me to retire. I felt that I should step aside and let younger people take on the responsibilities and the duties that I was trying to do. The third thing was that I, over the years, had become increasingly frustrated by the lack of modern biology in my background, and I did not want to fade slowly into the sunset, teaching more and more obsolete material. So that again made me feel that physiology needed to be taught in a different way than I was capable of teaching it because of my my own background and my own interests. So these things all contributed to my decision to opt for retirement, and also the fact that it was better for my wife, much younger than I am, but to come to get away from the tensions and problems of her own academic career. It was good for her to seek early retirement, and it was good for me to seek regular retirement, and the two of us together could make a new life that was not going to be as complicated as we'd had in Madison. And for that reason, we decided also to leave Madison and move to Maine. We had been coming to Maine for about 9 or 10 years after I decided that I was looking for a summer vacation rather than summer research, and my research activities were pretty much in abeyance for a while. And so I wanted to come to come away from Madison, come back to the marine milieu, where I could work with marine animals much more easily than I could in Madison. Also, we had bought an old house in Maine and had spent a good deal of effort in rebuilding it. So we had invested a lot of sweat equity into this house, and we enjoyed the chance to live in it year round. And also, we were moving from a busy small city to a small town, because Chabig Island, where I live now, is only a population of 300 or so people in the wintertime, although it rises to 1,800 in the summer. It still has the feel of a small town where you know everyone and everybody knows you. When I moved here, we built an addition to our house and made it into a one-room laboratory, and we took the equipment that Madison loaned me and equipped it as a lab. And so ever since, I have been working here at my own pace and on my own questions about Cassiopeia jellyfish. I'm pleased to report that I gave a proper scientific paper by invitation on the work that I've been doing at the International Congress of Selenorate Biology that was held last summer in Kansas. And that work is now in press and will appear. So after a number of years of not publishing anything, I'll have another publication out, which will show that I'm continuing to work on the problems that interest me.